So, I guess you all know why you're here. No one left the room around the table. This is, it's going to be kind of an introduction as well as a sort of a brief dive into some of the more technical points later on. Before I start, who's used Django in some way before? Maybe almost 6 people, right? Okay, well, that's pretty good. Who's used Python before? Okay. Good. Right. I don't mean that in a bad way. Like I said in the abstract, that reading knowledge of Python is assumed, but nothing beyond that, which still sort of stands true. If you've never seen Django before, this talk will still hopefully make lots of sense. And if you've used Django before, well, hopefully the presentation will be really exciting, and you might learn something. But at least initially, I'm going to have to start off assuming nobody knows anything about Django. Django is, something that's already been asked that a few people wanted it since then. The URL at the bottom of these slides is for the future, will be available after this call. I don't want to give people too much of a preview of what I'm talking about, which you will read it and leave. So I'll put up the slides as well as the little code example I'm doing at the end of the talk. And I'll come back to that URL too, so many of you are completely crazy, but how hard can 26.com be? So Django is a pure Python web framework, if you want to do the business card description of it. The idea is that if you're building websites, there's a lot of things you do over and over again. You need to usually somehow get data out of a database or get data from somewhere to put on web pages. You need to have a way of creating your web pages and populating them with data, and usually you want to give it a consistent look and feel. So there's some common elements on every web page. You need to be able to process when someone makes a request of your website. You need to be able to understand the URL and get the right bits of information based on that URL. And things like that. There's a lot of stuff. Everyone who's built websites has done this sort of stuff over and over again. Django is by no means the only or the first framework to try and solve this problem, except yet another one. For comparison, sort of direct equivalents to Django are things like Ruby on Rails, TurboGears. Drupal is something that you could build with Django if you wanted to. Zope is, I guess, some sort of equivalent, although, again, the match isn't quite perfect. For those who are wondering late, don't worry, you haven't missed much. We're exactly one slide in. One word in. So, Django is just another framework to do it. When it was originally, well, I guess the next thing is, Django was originally written to scratch an itch by a company called Lawrence Journal World. Lawrence being a small town in Kansas, just outside Kansas City in the US. I'm not going to go into the whole history of it because I don't know it, I wasn't there at the time. And later on I've got pointed to a couple of videos on Google where the actual creators are talking about the history of it. But essentially, these three guys are mostly Jews and credit. Some of the picture there is Agent Olivardi, one of the original writers of Django, and off to his right is Simon Wilson, who now works for Yahoo. At the time, Simon and Agent both worked for Foreign Journal World and needed something to, they kind of PhD set up to enable them to put up a bunch of the newspaper content online. As they probably wanted to do more and more stuff, they found that they were just running into problems that they couldn't necessarily solve quickly. So they did the bullet, rewrote their whole setup in Python, and initially it wasn't the idea wasn't to release this as open source software or anything. It was just something purely for discussion internally. And it became useful, and Lawrence Journal World is these days, even back then, and I'm talking about, what are we up to, 2007, so mid-2004 to mid-2005 sort of time period was they were using this internally. And the website ljworld.com was becoming better and better in terms of rapidly getting content up to date. Because they were having the problem that a reporter or journalist would come back to the office in the afternoon saying, okay, here's something I'm doing in tomorrow's paper, can we have something online to sort of support this? And they're actually now, no worries, sure, someone brings up an idea over lunch, it's up by the end of the day. And which they came up with the slogan that somebody put protectionist with deadlines. they wanted to do a good job, had technical looking URLs, validating HTML content, so tick the boxes, things you want on a good website, as well as interesting content, and by the way, they'd like it done quickly. So they came up with this product towards the end of, I'm guessing a little bit here, I think it's the end of 2004, Jacob Kaplan-Lock, who's in the bottom left with that picture there, looking like the Terminator or something, he had the opportunity to go along and work with them as well. These days, Adrian's moved back to Chicago and is working for the sort of special projects division of WashingtonPost.com. Simon's moved on to finish his 1-year internship in Kansas and is now back in London working for Yahoo with the Yahoo Developer Network. And Jacob is basically the senior developer at LJWorld.com doing Django work and producing actual newspaper content there. So he sort of assumed the mantle of the in Kansas. And the other two are still very heavily involved, like Adrian particularly is still the head maintainer of Django, comes up with most of the cool ideas and gives the blessing for anything the rest of us come up with. And on top of Django, the Lock guys built a CMS system, content management system called Ellington, that they now sell commercially. So they were happy to release Django, the underlying framework, and add some value out on top of this that they actually released. Like you can go to, I think it's ellingtoncms.com is their commercial product. And they sold to a few media organizations around the country. It's basically a content management system for online media sites. So managing photos, calendars, schedules, stories, obviously. And they're doing some pretty good. They've gone to the point where last year they were madly hiring extra people because Jacob and his colleagues wanted to sleep sometimes, and they were just far too busy doing their own work as well as supporting the monster they created. And these days, it's working out pretty well for them. Okay, so OJWorld.com was the original. Okay, Murphy's Law here. That's probably the only URL I didn't actually check it, the right one. But it's 404. We may have to quickly check the slide. I just realized they typed that into the last minute. You don't have to click on that check and go to that place. If you get something that looks like a newspaper site, I guess correctly. But OJWorld.com is the Kansas, is the online version of a printed newspaper. They actually got successful enough that there are portions of the online site that now get printed once a week and distributed for Lawrence citizens. Like Lawrence is apparently, like Lawrence is the place where Kansas State University is, so it's a bit of a university town. He's also got a very big music scene. Apparently people like bands travel there who wouldn't normally play a small town like that. Lots of bars and cafes and stuff. I've only been there for about 20 minutes one morning as the train was passing through, so I can't comment on it personally. But like, everything that Jacob and Adrian say, it's actually a very nice place to visit. These days, it's pretty much, it's a big deal in the Python world. Like what 60 people have turned up here to hear me talk about it, apparently word is getting out. Every man and their dog seems to have written some blog software for it. People looking to see, there's a couple of over here, by the way. You'll get your head on camera very briefly as you run across the front of the room, but that's fine. Being used in a bunch of other media sites throughout the place. Project.washingtonpost.com, that particular URL there, project.washingtonpost.com/congress, is actually they took various information from different sources about the US Congress, voting records, various vital information about congressmen. And going back for a number of historical congresses, not just the current one. And so you can look up how particular representative voted on all the issues since they were in Congress, whether they registered a vote for, against, or were absent. And you can group it by various things, location, sex, age, whatever. Even, astonishingly, astrological sign. So if you're interested in how did all the Scorpios vote on a particular bill, you can actually do that grouping. Which it's kind of an activity. You can basically do it for free, and you get a mention on a few of those sort of weird media commentary sites out of that. So it works pretty well. There's another site that I don't actually have to URL there, but Faces of the Fallen is another thing that Washington Post has done, basically collecting information about soldiers in Iraq and grouping them by where they came from, and here's a link to obituaries, and here's a link to service records and stuff like that. aggregation of information that's all out there, but pulling it together fairly quickly and doing a nice presentation. All of that sort of stuff in Project WashingtonPost.com is run by Django at the back end. Adrian Holabadi is sort of senior programmer and there gets to do whatever he wants in that respect. And a lot of the improvements go into Django. Of course, Adrian finds they're going to do this, so wake up one morning and there's a new feature in Django to do something. There's a couple of online gaming sites that use Django, so there's an online history site and things like that that is using Django. ChicagoClimb.org was probably the first non-media site using Django. Again, Adrian Holabadi designed the site. He collected, you can download various police reports in Chicago, combine that with Google Maps, and suddenly you can start plotting, give a very interactive demonstration of where are various crimes that committed in Chicago, plot your route to work and look at the crimes that occurred along that route, and do I need to find another way to work? It's just Chicago, right? It's not like not a double town. So, look at it by, I think you're buying a house in a particular area. So it does have its uses beyond the slightly macabre. And again, it's all Django in the back end collecting information. He just goes and downloads the police reports, I think it's every day or twice a day or something, and then combines that with the Google API. And it's the regular mashup deal. Fairly popular site running today. If I get time at the end, I'll sort of go back and show you a few of these. We've done enough to get through and they only gave me an hour and a half today. I'm used to a 3-hour tutorial at this conference, so I may run out of time. This website on the Django project wiki, basically everyone's encouraged to write to Django site and to fully confess to using Django in the back end is happy to put up their site there, like encouraged to put up their site. It's pages and pages of various sites. A small sample, this was Jacob Kaplan did this at OSCON this year, basically went through back in July or August, July of last year. Every site that was on that page went and retrieved their page and combined it into a nice montage. So it's just a rough sample. Just to show you, there is more than like 3 or 4 sites. It's not embarrassing for somebody who we come with Yahoo. This one here is actually the screen that Django pops up when it can't serve your request properly. There's a syntax error in their code or something. So someone got to represent the error screen. But the rest of them are up there. These people who've done Django projects back in that time can have fun trying to find their site. I've got about 3 up there somewhere. So I keep losing them. I need to write down where the ones are that I built. Yeah, that idea. Look, a lot of people beyond the maintainers using this project. In fact, on the Django users mailing list, which is 2,500 odd subscribers, there's a lot of people there who are not at all interested in developing Django itself. They just want to use it. And they're using it for all sorts of creative things that you've never thought of, which is very encouraging for a project that's only been released as open source back in, what, now about 18 months out of the next open source life. Been for a lot of things in the last year. This was a quote that came up on Wired.com actually about a month ago, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Django reminds me a bit of the character in Airplane who always answers, what do you make of that? With quite literally, I can make a hat, a brooch, a pterodactyl. If you're too young to remember Airplane, it's also within a pinky in the brain episode at one point. But it's kind of cool. It's kind of true with Django. People keep saying it's just a media site, so it's just X, Y, or Z. And then someone comes along and basically disproves that by doing something else with it. So it is true, it's not really tied to just doing a CMS or just doing a general site. There are some features in Django that you can sort of spot were originally made for a newspaper, but you don't have to use them if you're not doing a newspaper, or sometimes you can use them and use them in other circumstances. If you're really interested in sort of what is going on, DjangoProject.com is the main website for the project. Includes a weblog from the developers, includes a community aggregator of various people like a sort of Planet Django, includes all the documentation. Every time, all the documentation from the source tree is automatically converted to HTML and then put up on the website. So it's updated like every 15 minutes. So when we fix the documentation bug, the documentation on the website is up to date immediately. The only place we sort of fall down there is if we write a new piece of documentation that has to actually be put into the website manually the first time. DjangoBooks.com is a site for a book that Jacob and Adrian are writing at the moment that will eventually be published through A-Press. And they've made it available online with a feature for people who have comments for sort of, this doesn't read clearly, or I don't understand this, or whatever. And you can comment line by line, essentially, or paragraph by paragraph. It's the new way of doing comments these days. You don't just comment at the end of the page. You can put your comment wherever. And according to Adrian, it's been enormously successful in getting them a bunch of feedback on that thing. So this is available. Hopefully people will buy lots of paper copies of it when it comes out. But at the moment, the only way to get hold of this book is in the beta version online. And it is incredibly useful. Written by two of the main authors of the project, so they do know what they're talking about. And written very well. Again, for those who are badly scribbling all these journals, I will put up the slides at the end of the up on my website so you can download them. So maybe just you have to get one URL right at the end if you want. And searching for Django on Google, by the way, is always very useful. Facebook searching for Django on Google. Yeah, rather than me going through all of the history and how it all started more than I have here, on video.google.com there are at least two very good Django videos. One was a talk that Jacob Kaplan-Moss gave at Google in San Francisco, or South Bay of San Francisco, where it would have been early last year, I guess, about 50 minutes or an hour or so that Google had made available on video.google.com. And he's talking there to Google engineers, and no one threw fruit or laughed at him or anything, so it was apparently a well-received talk. And a little bit earlier than that, late last year, Adrian and David Hyman-Hansen, who is the guy behind Ruby on Rails, gave a Snake and Ruby talk to, I think it was a joint meeting of Chicago Python Users Group and Chicago Ruby Group, whatever they call. And Adrian gave the Django side of that, talking about Django, about an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes, I think, that talk. And both of them talk about the history as well as a bit of what Django does. But they might be two other perspectives that people want to go and have a look at some point, just to give you another view. I'm trying consciously not to repeat a lot of what they've given in those talks, because we're trying to expand the knowledge of Django, not just all give it in there. So, brief introduction. By the way, I don't mind if anyone has questions, sing out as you go along, but just clean it up for the end. But now, I want to move on to sort of doing something a bit more concrete. What can we actually do with Django, and how does it work? And a few ways to approach this, but let's look at it from the user's point of view. What happens when you request a web page, requesting a blog page or a newspaper page or whatever? Request goes to the server from your browser or from, doesn't have to be from a web browser, it could be from any sort of tool. Something on the server side, and this is not Django specific at all, something has to decide who's responsible for dealing with this particular incoming request. Where do I send it? We have many websites that are under that particular host name. Once that's been decided, some function gets called to who is responsible for actually collecting the results and sending it back. Now, at this point in the Django world, it's been passed off to an actual Python function who is responsible for collecting the data and sending it back. So we collect the data. Now, there might be some mostly static content here, which is the common look and feel of the site. If, for example, we know we're presenting the front page of a site, so there's probably a navigation menu on the left-hand side, and there's some common stuff at the top, there's some boilerplate in there to, I don't know, grab some images from Flickr and grab some Google Ads and whatnot. So that's all sort of in a template. Anyway, it's a template in Django, it might be some other common construct in other languages, but it's essentially static. And then there's the dynamic mix for this particular request. Today's news stories, today's special offers, things like that. And you might get them out of a database, or you might get them from any other source. Suck them in from, like, in a case like Chicago crime, use Google Maps, use the police data you downloaded recently, use the input about where what particular area they're viewing at the moment. Combine all that together. Put the results together, put the template and the dynamic bits together, hopefully in the right order, and then send that blob of data back to the user. Now, the data you're sending back could be an HTML page, which is sort of the common example, but there's nothing to say it has to be an HTML page. It could also be PDF or CSV or just plain text. It could be an RSS feed, so some sort of XML or pseudo XML response that you're sending back. Django actually has a syndication plugin that comes with it to enable you to easily, basically using the same code that you would use to produce your blog page output with a list of articles, instead wrap it up in the XML containers necessary to send back RSS 2 or Atom 1.0. And so there's no particular tie to HTML, although the templates are sort of, the templating language is basically easy to do HTML. There's no content requirements there. And again, if the request coming in need not be from a browser. It could be if you are serving back an Atom response or an RSS response, it could be coming from a feed reader. It could be during a true web-based website, troubleshooting inside or something, and so the requests are coming from some other application. Again, we don't care. The things processed in URL, they're just URLs. It doesn't matter if a browser is the other end or not. In that list of what happens, very simplified, thanks to Peter on slide, there are sort of other bells and whistles you can get. It may be a common page. Your front page may only change every 15 minutes or twice a day or something, so no need to generate it every time. There's a caching layer that we can put in there to say, okay, this request, we've seen it before, the copy we've got is new enough, just send them back the answer we've already generated. Very fast. Internationalization tends to be popular with people who don't speak English. So we have an internationalization framework. It's very similar, essentially based on the GNU GetText sort of style of translation. You mark up the phrases that need to be translated, both in the templates and in the code that generates dynamic content. And it runs through a tool that produces a PO file that you can then hand off to your friendly open source translator and he sends you back something in another language. And then based on the browser's request language or on whatever other feature you may want to use to trigger the language change, we can send back translated content. So by and large, you don't have to generate separate templates for every language that you want to do. You just translate the one template and Tango automatically does the substitution. Now, the overhead there is not zero. It's pretty small, but it's not zero. So it is possible to turn off, for example, the translation layer if you only are doing one language. And that one language doesn't have to be, you may only want to be serving French content. And so you don't need to run through the whole translation layer. The return data can be compressed on the layout, speed things up a bit. What I did put in there, we also have pretty much transparent support for things like e-tags. So this, for those who aren't maybe intimately familiar with how HTTP request works, one of the things that goes along with the request is if you've requested this URL before, he can say, the last time I saw it, he was the e-tag you gave me back. Just a little hash. A complete mess of numbers and digits. You send it back, and the server can say, wait, I've got something for that e-tag. It hasn't changed. Here's the content you saw before. It's part of the caching layer. And a very fast way to send back the same information. You can also send along with your request, only sending new content if it's been modified since a particular date and time. The e-tags tend to be the most popular way to do this. Session management is built in, again, as an optional extra, but something that's very easy to integrate. There's a cookie that goes back and forth that contains a session identifier, and the session information, you can store whatever you like that you can basically pick all of the Python objects in the session. The session itself is stored in the database, the session identifier goes back and forth. We deliberately decided not to do what PHP can do, which is if you don't support cookies, it falls back to putting the session identifier in the URL. We've decided with our session plugin, it has to be in a cookie. It is completely possible to replace the session manager, so if someone really wants sessions in the URL, they can do it. And in fact, right as I speak, someone is designing a cookieless version of the session plugin because they need it for embedded mobile devices or something. So there is a lot going on there, which is exactly what we hope would happen. Authentication management, you must be logged in to view certain pages or not, and which includes, so there is built in a whole create a user, give them a password, they have permissions to do X, Y, Z thing. That's reasonably built in. And last but by no means least, the admin interface, which is a bit of a, at the time it was a bit of an identifying feature of Tango. If you create a whole bunch of data in the database, first thing you do is end up having to run a whole bunch of web pages to work with that data. It's a new data, look at what's in the database. And particularly initially, imagine you're building a website very fast, and we'll get technical example. Reporter comes in and says, I've got all this information, can we put up on the website by tomorrow? Sure, no worries, didn't have a date tonight anyway. The developer starts knocking up the web pages, like the web developer starts designing the web pages, the end guy starts designing the models, the database holders, basically for all this information. Pretty early on, you want to be able to start entering the data. It doesn't have to be a bells and whistles interface, it has to be a basic thing so that you can start entering data, delete a record if you made a mistake, change some things if you made a mistake, and so on. Django comes with a built-in way to, for every model you create, the model here being some, think of a model at the moment as a database table, an object you want to store in the database. Every one of those automatically gets a page that allows you to create new ones, delete ones, look at the list of them, sort them, filter based on different criteria and so forth. And so this makes it very easy for the reporter or whoever sitting around with nothing much to do to start entering the data while you are still building the rest of the website to display this information. Okay. At various points here, I'm just going to stop and actually show you what Django can do rather than being a talking head.
Just being one of those times.
Well, that's what that is. I always forgot to do that.
Let's close this up. Let's go to your side. Everybody read that.
So, Django comes with a little tool called Django Admin. That has a lot of options there, you can see. Django Admin does everything. It's the Django Swiss Army knife that starts starting up a project area. And the good thing is that most of the tools that Django Admin can offer you are not needed for most people. If we're going to start up a little project, so starting a Django project from scratch, and there's, bear in mind, I'm simplifying a few things here. It is possible to take bits and pieces of existing Django projects and pull them together into a single site. And some terminology that I guess is important here, we tend to talk about applications in Django, which is something that may be some models, so information about what's stored in the database, possibly some templates, possibly some URL controls, like these URLs are processed by these view functions. And it might just have templates, or it might just have models, or it might just have the view functions for looking at how to get the data together and combine it with a template. Those tend to be called applications, or apps, because no one can say applications stuff the first 7 times. And when you pull a bunch of apps together into a project, there's no reason necessarily to have projects, it just makes a convenient sort of folder, particularly when you're starting out. So, and I must admit, even at my point, I still tend to start projects. So we start a project and we'll call it whatever. Now all this does creates a directory of the same name. This is going to be something that contains Python code. So a little bit of a warning at this point. It's probably useful to have your project name being something you can import into Python, which means don't use hyphens and don't use spaces. You can't, things with hyphen and spaces are not valid module and package names in Python, so that's worth thinking about at this point. You can change it later, it's just a little busy. Inside that directory, created a couple of useful things to start off with. Manage.py is basically Django admin.py that knows it's inside this particular project, so it starts by looking for things inside this directory. This means when it needs the settings file, it knows to look at this particular settings file for its configuration information. Because there are a bunch of options in Django Admin that work with your models. For example, turning the models into the database records or validating that your models are actually correct. Things like that. Manage.py is just a convenient function to say, look, work with this project. Settings.py is probably the most useful one when we first start out, contains surprisingly enough the settings for the project. Most of them you don't have to touch. you can eventually, but there's no need. If you just want to get up and running at an absolute basic level, there's almost nothing here. In fact, that's simple enough.
We want
5 QE,
but we'll worry about that later.
The only thing I have to change here now, you can see here,
you learn by doing it first.
Gecko is a little bit agnostic about what it wants to use the back end. Databases, you have a few choices here. PostgreSQL, MySQL, SQLite, which is SQLite, for those who don't know, is a pretty good SQL database that just runs off a single file. Very small, doesn't have things like transactions, doesn't actually check things like foreign keys, referential integrity. So you're sacrificing a few little bits, but certainly for development it's great. Because if you want to start again, you boil away the file and start again. If you want to start again with a PostgreSQL database or something, it's a little bit, you have to remember like three holes apart. So I'm going to actually use SQLite here. And even that comment is a little bit of a lie. There's in fact two different PostgreSQL backends based on two different versions of the Python wrapper around PostgreSQL. And there's now a pretty much working Oracle backend. They're still working on getting the SQL Server backend working perfectly. But these things are all coming along. As volunteers pop up out of the work, we're willing to maintain these things. We add in extra database backends. By and large, you don't. Someone developing with Django doesn't have to care about the database too much. You can care about the database if you like writing your own SQL. You can do it, but we're adopting the approach. People like to work in Python, and Python programmers don't necessarily want to have to worry about writing SQL statements and things like that. So Django makes transparent the job of storing the data in the database. You don't have to worry about actually working with Python objects. We do need to give it a name. In the SQLite case, this is just a file that doesn't even have to exist yet. I can have any name you like. Okay, not to use the SQLite 3, not to use the... it's probably going to change it. We keep thinking we need to make that time zone you call BNP. It only helps Adrian. I'm very good Chicago. There's almost nothing else here I have to change. You can see here, by the way, a few of the holdovers of the original genesis of Django. one of the philosophies behind doing a highly dynamic website like this is a lot of static content, for example, images, maybe sound files. Watchtable will actually allow you to download video clips, sound files, iCal files of where bands are appearing, drink specials from restaurants, stuff like that. All these sort of static files, there's no need necessarily to have them coming off the same server that is doing all your work producing the dynamic pages. So it allows you to easily enough set up a pointer to say, look, all my static media is over on some other URL here. And if people upload new information, it also goes over there. The secret key is necessary for the session management. It gets generated randomly each time you create a setting file. Don't need to worry. We can see here middleware classes. Middleware are these things that do all these optional extras I mentioned before. Well, we can obviously see the session management, the authentication management. The XP middleware is essentially adds some X headers, some custom headers to particular requests if they come from known URLs. And this means the processing functions to look for these particular headers. And say, okay, if these headers are present, I need to do some extra information, maybe provide some more information or whatever. Common middleware provides some common stuff, supposedly enough. It does things like you can turn on options to say, look, always add a credit slash at the end of the URL if it's not there. Always add www at the front if it's not there, just to make everything a bit more uniform. There's other middleware for things like the GSIP compression, the e-tag management, trying to mitigate some cross-scripting vulnerabilities in form submissions. towards the end, if I have time, I'll come back and show you a bunch of the other middleware pieces. But there's various options there that, again, we don't need at the start. All right, here, I need to add, I want to use the admin interface, so I need to add in the admin interface. When you're starting up with Django, particularly, you don't need to worry, touch the installed app, except to add the admin interface, it is optional, and then to add any of the new apps that we might create. In this case, I'm going to create a new app.
cut the pool more slightly here, but trust me, we're about to create a new app that we'll call Port.
And these are just Python, you can sort of see, they're just Python import paths, except they're because again, there's a chicken and egg problem. This file gets read possibly before it's able to import these things. It wants to import them later on. But these are just, essentially, you need to be able to go import LCA 207.4 at some point and expect it to work. So we didn't have to change much there. We added the database, we added our install application, and we changed the time zone. Now let's actually create our app, start app this time. Cool. By the way, like you're thinking he's typing all these commands, how can he possibly remember this? In the Django source, pay no attention to the leading edge. Really, works horribly. Actually, quite seriously, you can be running subversion copies of Django without any real risk. It works. We have all the documentation in there. And I'll just point over here to the tutorial. Maybe read overview.txt first. Unfortunately, just all alphabetical here. Overview.txt is a good place to start. And then tutorials 1-4 are absolutely the place to start. And they literally lead you through this whole start project, start app, deal with your settings, and so forth. And this is the stuff that I've seen is automatically generated and put up on the website as well. So you can go and do the click through the web browser and prepare all this. All the documentation is there in actually logical order. So yeah. The overview, installation, and then going through the tutorial. There is actually some information in the tutorial that is possibly nowhere else in the documentation at the moment. We are trying to fix that, but it's also a very good incentive to say to people, look, spend 20 minutes, go through the tutorial. They're not optional. So back here, I went to start app, it created my port directory. And again, you don't need to even run start app. You can, as we see, it doesn't contain very much in this directory. And those files, so init.py is empty, just necessary to import. Views.py, views are, in Django, views are the functions that actually do the processing. The URL processing works out which view function do I pass control to based on the incoming request. The view function then gets a copy of the request that is coming in and is responsible for working out what data, what template do I need, and return the result. Views.py here, well, doesn't contain a lot. We can't help you too much there. Models in Django are the things that are the persistent storage. We've helped you there. We've given you the import space you need. And then from then on you go to models. Now, this is, unfortunately, this is where a little bit of education is dangerous. Many people are used to hearing the phrase model view controller when talking about software engineering. Django doesn't quite, it sounds like we're there. We've got models, we've got views, you're waiting for controllers. Sadly, not quite. The better acronym for Django is probably MTV, models, templates, and views. Models are the persistent, the objects that get stored in databases. Now, you don't have to use the models in Django. If you want to get your data from somewhere else, or if you don't like databases, and you just want to construct them yourself, you don't have to use the Django database backend. All entirely up. Templates are the things we'll see later on for the static, the mostly static content I was talking about earlier. And views are the functions that they're kind of like controllers in the traditional MVC way of thinking, in that they're responsible for putting together all the information and passing back the results. However, some of the controller responsibility is also given to the URL processing that initially happens when a request comes in. So MVC doesn't quite map onto Django neatly. MTV works pretty well as an acronym. So that's all we needed to start up our project. At this point, we're ready to start coding, if only we knew what we could do there. So back to the amazing slide. Now, before I talked about LinkedIn in terms of request coming from browser, XYZ happens. Probably not the clearest way to explain things when I'm actually showing you code. So I'm going to start deep in the internal with the here's the data that, here's the object that we're going to store in the database and I'm going to change from request to request. And for this case, I'm just using a hypothetical sports tournament of some description. All we know is it has home and away matches and it has scores and players who have names and cities. So you sit down and you think a bit, what are my models going to be here? What are my objects that are playing around at this point? We have our players, and then we have matches between players. So matches later on are going to be something that somehow links two players together and maybe record their score. Django has a bunch of classes for specifying what type of model, what type of field we have in the model. Python being loosely typed, there's no way to explicitly say this attribute in a class is a string or this attribute is an integer. We have to tell it explicitly. This is important because we're going to start to put these things into a database and the database really, really wants to know what type it is. So we say, okay, name is a character field, city is a character field. There's integer fields, date fields. There are, a lot of fields. There's actually, again, one of the documentation files lists all of the fields that we have. So I'm just using a couple of very simple fields here. The inner class you see here, the admin inner class, basically says in the admin interface, which I'll show you in a minute, here are the particular fields to display. In this case, both of them. But you may have some fields that you don't want to display. This is for human consumption and what they can enter. And the stir method is when I print out an instance of this model, what I want to display. In this case, print out the name. We're just going to take a 2-minute break here while the AV people print the DVD. Yeah. All right, time starts now.